Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. ESPN the magazine is marking its 20th anniversary this year, and to celebrate, the influential sports publication presented its 2 million subscribers with a cover article listing what it calls the 20 most dominant athletes of our time. So, you know where they ranked Tom Brady? Hint, not number one. And if you've got an issue with that, you can take it up with Allison Overholt. She is the editor-in-chief of ESPN the magazine, and I recently talked with her at the Simmons College Women's Leadership Conference in the Seaport. And yeah, we talked about the dominant 20 rankings, but really, we were there to talk with Overholt about the fact that she's the first female editor of ESPN's magazine. Quite a feat, especially in sports journalism where, speaking of dominance, it's a world dominated by men. For example, according to Forbes, 90% of sports editors are male. 90%, I said. 40% of athletes are female, but women's sports only garner 4% of media coverage. So I asked Allison Overholt what she thought of those numbers.
I think that's probably accurate. I think we are sitting right in the transition moment. So when I first got into sports journalism, it was my first day at ESPN was the Monday after the Super Bowl in 2005. And if you look at the difference in our industry, in the way the world encounters women athletes, from just 2005 until 2018, it's been a sea change. And I will say that it feels like just in the last 5 years, just the momentum feels like it is gathering steam to a degree that really energizes me.
So this can be somewhat still treacherous ground for women leaders, though, because I want to ask you, like, how much of changing those numbers as part of your mission as editor-in-chief of the magazine?
Well, it's interesting that you asked that. So I think it was in very early January this year, I was on Twitter and I saw somebody that I follow say, you know, if you want to set goals, if you want to make changes, you need to, you know, write them down and share them with the world. And I said, all right, I'm going to extrovert my goals, put more women on the cover of ESPN the magazine.
Okay.
I think that we have to be responsible for changing that. You know, one of the things we talk about in our business a lot is take the helmets off. You become invested in the success, the fall, your fandom, you know, in many, many ways is an emotional connection, an investment in the stories of the people that you get to know. So we're still playing catch up as a society around taking the metaphorical helmets off of female athletes and sort of saying, we see you, we want to tell your stories, we're putting you in front of the public so they can become as invested in your success as you are. And, you know, we're seeing that already. We were the only magazine in the country to put Chloe Kim on the cover before the Olympics.
Because my daughter is obsessed with her.
Right, she's amazing. You know, 4 years ago, she was the best snowboarder in the world, and she was just too young to go. I mean, we knew she was going to dominate, and we knew we had the opportunity to say, hey, while you're paying attention to all these other people who are tremendous athletes, you might be missing the one who is just going to explode onto the scene in Korea, and look what happened.
Does social media and the internet make helping create that connection between athletes and fans easier for you in terms of what you do at the magazine, or harder? Because they have a direct link now.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest. You know, I think we have the opportunity because of that direct link to see athletes in a way you've never been able to see before. And now, because they're so accessible, because they're so warm and so human and so available to people, it actually opens the door for a different kind of conversation to take place. One of the things that I actually really love about the magazine specifically is that it's a very unique form. It is permanent and it is tangible in a world that is very ephemeral.
Mm-hmm.
And that still matters to athletes. It's something that's very, very unique and particular and special about magazines to still carry that power of what does it mean to be on a cover? What does it mean to be effectively a poster that could be on somebody's wall?
Absolutely. So since we're at a women's leadership conference here, I just want to also ask you just sort of about how you balance work, home, family, the responsibilities of running the organization that you do. How do you pull that off?
So that's both my favorite question and my least favorite question. It's the thing everybody asks, and I always just say, if somebody figures it out, please tell me.
Same.
Right? I don't know that it's possible to balance it all. And I think, you know, probably the most important conversation that women can have and that men can have is the fact that it's a false premise that you can perfectly balance everything. And you have to acknowledge the fact that at any given time, you're going to be all in on something, and something else is probably going to be going off the rails, and that's okay. And every day you pick the maybe three things that are most crucial and most important. And some days it's going to be, you know, making sure that our next issue of the magazine is as incredible as it could possibly be, or making sure that we're partnering with our TV collaborators and creating a show that is just going to sparkle to celebrate our 20th anniversary. But there are other days when the best thing that I can do that day is going to be showing up for my daughter because she was student of the month in her first grade class. And I'm not going to miss that. And if it means I have to apologize to four people because I'm bailing on a meeting, then that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, every day it's just the making the choice of what's important.
So I have to ask you about some of the controversies that ESPN has been facing recently, because, and this is more specifically at the network, because in December of 2017, the Boston Globe had this huge report about sexual harassment complaints at ESPN. Former employees were talking about a toxic culture at the network for women. And like, here's a quote from the Globe stories, that some women said that the environment at ESPN can be so hostile and plumb positions for female sports journalists so precarious that they hid pregnancies and felt pressured to take short maternity leaves in order to protect their positions. One anchor even did her scheduled broadcast while she was having a miscarriage to prove her commitment to her job, according to former employees. Now, again, this is regarding the network, but it's all under the umbrella of ESPN. So I was just wondering, I mean, have you in your career ever experienced anything like that?
So stories like that are just gutting to me to hear. Just as a woman, to hear that about any other woman is awful. I can't speak to what they specifically experienced. I would never challenge the stories of any individual woman or call into question what she's gone through. I can say that for me, my experience couldn't have been more different. I was actually 3 months pregnant when they gave me the job to be editor-in-chief of the magazine. My bosses had no idea. I was actually planning to go in and tell my boss at the time, the leader of ESPNW, Laura Gentile, that week that I was pregnant. They couldn't have been more supportive.
Okay, so last couple of questions. You're in a sports town.
I am.
Obviously, people have some pretty strong opinions around here. So I wanted to just ask you about the fact that the magazine's celebrating, as you mentioned earlier, the 20th anniversary.
Yep.
And you published a dominant 20. And as the magazine describes it, the most formidable, awe-inspiring, and downright dominant athletes of the past two decades, in order, across sports. First of all, Tom Brady at number 20.
I know, that's a brutal one.
And Peyton Manning at number 3.
I'm a Boston person. My whole family is here in Boston, so it's brutal. That was a matter of hot debate.
Do you care to defend that decision?
We actually didn't include postseason statistics. And the feeling was, in the postseason, the elements at play there really were about team dynamics. And there are so many things that are hard to account for when you are normalizing performances across sports. Obviously, it's clear Tom Brady is an incredibly dominant athlete. But yes, by this measure, he landed at number 20.
Okay, so about that exercise of normalizing across sports. So, fan sports columnists, gotta love them. But Steve Buckley in the Boston Herald, he had some pretty strong opinions about the whole exercise of the dominant 20.
I'm sure he did.
Here's what he said. He said, it's, quote, again, this is Steve Buckley, but, quote, a really, really lame attempt to take a whole bunch of athletes from a whole bunch of different sports and run them through the same beauty pageant. He goes on and he says he really takes issue with, quote, the lunacy of turning a ranking of professional athletes into a drawer full of mismatched socks.
Well, so what I love about what he said is the way he says it with such passion, because that gets to how powerfully sports fans feel, you know, about whatever it is that they're rooting for most. So what was interesting for us about this, it was to look at the performance of stars. We were trying to evaluate how much better they are statistically than others in their field and other peers. So when you then took those differences, those standard deviations or performance difference, and you compared those to the differences in performance level across sports, that's what we meant when we talked about normalizing across sports.
Okay, interesting. Perhaps that explains why there were only five women on the list.
Yes.
Is it that the standard deviations between like the best women in each of their fields actually isn't that large? Like, there's just a lot of good women sort of bunched up closer together?
Well, there's a few things. So that was one of the – that was the crucial thing and the performance piece of it. We also evaluated when we were talking about the greatest athletes across all sports, we also set a revenue threshold. And we said we are only looking at professional sports with revenues of $100 million or more.
Oh, well, that's not really fair.
So historically, actually what's powerful to me, I mean, it shows the movement that we've seen in the last two decades. Because if you were to do this exercise two decades ago, I can guarantee there's zero women on that list. You know, what would be interesting would be to continue doing an exercise like this and see how those numbers start to change. So that's why you're seeing, you know, WNBA players on there. That's why you're seeing, you know, track and field athletes at the elite Olympic level, because there actually are revenues at stake that allow them to truly be in that pool of the world's most significant sporting organizations. And then within that, you look at the performance and the dominance that they experience, and you're able to sort of see how those folks play across sports.
So my last question has to do with the advice that you would give to young women who want to go into sports journalism. One thing we haven't talked about is that, you know, women who are on the sidelines doing the daily coverage, etc., we've heard so many stories of the past couple of years about the misogyny that they have to endure from, you know, on social media, etc. It can be pretty bad. And so I'm just wondering, for a young woman who is thinking about, like, that this is the career that she wants to follow, like, what would be your advice to her in terms of, you know, how to navigate all of that?
You bring up probably one of the most difficult things about not just our profession, but any profession where women are the forward-facing talent or personalities in the world. When you want to do something, when you want to do something that no one else has done before, you know, you just have to get up every morning and say, hey, I'm going to throw myself into it. I'm going to have thick skin. A lot of people are going to tell me no. But anything that's worth having, you got to work for. So the piece of advice I would give is to speak up. Speak up and fight back. Obviously, in a way that is thoughtful and professional and responsible. But, you know, talking to your colleagues, talking to your managers and your bosses, reporting abusive behavior, knowing that you have a voice and that it's incredibly important not to stand by and allow those kinds of things to continue. And that we're in a moment where I think people are finally hearing women when they speak up and saying, believe women.
Yeah. Well, Allison Overholt is editor-in-chief of ESPN the magazine and ESPNW. Thank you so much. It's been really great to meet you and great to talk with you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. This has been great.
And to wrap up today, we want to say goodbye to our own Tom Brady of producing, our LeBron James of radio, Allison Bruzek. She's leaving the show and moving out to Seattle for the next step in her career. And we will miss you so much, Allison, your profound intelligence, your amazing ability to do four stories at once on air and online, and your unflappable demeanor. Thank you so much. We wish you the very, very best. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.